Welcome to Storybrooke.
Enjoy your stay.
Everybody, and welcome to One Spill episode 109. We'll be talking about Once Upon a Time season 6 episode 16, Mother's Little Helper. As always, if you want to get in touch with us on anything to do with Once Upon a Time, you can reach us on Twitter at Onceable or comment on this post on hypeable.com. My name is Brittany, and tonight I'm joined by Karen, Kristen, and Caitlin. How's everybody doing?
Not too bad.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, it's
so enthusiastic.
It's a little late. We're adjusting to allergies and Ludacris's Photoshop abs, and
it's so bad.
A lot of really random things before getting into Once Upon a Time tonight. So we'll get in the right headspace soon. And in order to do that, let's start with thumbs up, thumbs down for Mother's Little Helper. And let's kick it off with Caitlin.
I'm going to give it like a 3/4 the way thumbs up.
Okay.
Like, it was better than thumbs sideways, but not fully thumbs up is where I'm going. There are things I liked and things I maybe didn't like so much.
Karen, how about you?
I'm going to go with thumbs sideways. I thought it was a fairly decent episode. I actually really like the Black Fairy, and I think she's a very interesting character with very interesting powers. Kind of annoyed with Gideon and kind of annoyed with the pacing of it. It felt a little bit slow to me and it kind of dragged on, but it wasn't a bad episode by any means. So definitely thumbs sideways.
And Kristen, what about you?
I'm going to give it a thumbs up. Mostly because what I thought was going to happen with Gideon didn't, and Hook and was that Blackbeard, I believe, were just hysterical, and I want them to have their own buddy comedy and just make me giggle for an hour every week. But yeah, no, I mean, it wasn't like the best episode ever, but I enjoyed it, and it kept me at my attention the whole time, which I can't always say for Once Upon a Time. So yeah, thumbs up from me.
Yeah, I'm going to also go thumbs sideways because I agree with Kristen. I loved the Hook side plot a lot. And I also agree with Karen, though, that the pacing was a little off for me whenever we weren't with Hook, who felt like he had a very linear story. He's just like, I'm trying to get here, and every action I make is taking me either one step closer or, in the case of the episode, one step further from where he needs to be. And the rest of it was kind of expository. But I did like the Black Fairy. I think she's interesting. Except the way she says dearie, that bothered me for some reason. I'm like,
me
I get
too.
That she's Rumpel's mom, but she probably doesn't need to say that.
And you know what? It just doesn't sound the same unless he's saying it. Like, he makes it so sinister, and hers just fell flat, and I was like, girl, just stop trying.
Yeah, I agree. But none of us picked anything that had the word dearie in it for our favorite quotes. So let's go to Caitlin. What was your favorite quote from this episode?
So like everyone else, I thought the Blackbeard and Hook stuff was hilarious. So I took a quote from that, and it's when they come out and Blackbeard realizes that the Jolly Roger is not there, the ship he has just won in a game of cards. And Blackbeard says, "You lied to me," to which Hook replies, "And you had 6 aces in your deck. I'm not as drunk as your other opponents." Pirates.
I know.
Oh, they were so great together, especially just the whole, like, I'm going to betray you. No, I'm going to betray you. No, I'm going to betray you. Karen, what was your favorite quote?
Mine came from the Black Fairy, and it's after the kind of horrific scene when she turns Gideon's childhood friend into a bug and then squashes him. Like, that was actually kind of, like, violent and awful, but she's talking to him. She goes, "This is on you, Gideon, and my boot." And it was so bad, but I thought it was hilarious.
Karen has a very dark, twisted sense of humor sometimes.
Yeah. My goodness. All right. And Kristen, what was your favorite quote?
Mine comes from Henry, because when Henry gets a storyline, I get really excited. But it was when he said to Regina, if there's anyone who can undo your work, it's you. And it was cute and adorable. And I actually really, really loved the stuff with Regina and Henry. And I am looking forward to actually seeing his storyline play out. So
for the first time in a while, Regina doesn't really have a huge major conflict going on in her own life. So giving her and Henry a bit of time together was a welcome addition to Once Upon a Time. My favorite quote was from Snow when she and Emma like charge into Gold Shop demanding answers about the Black Fairy, and she says something, Emma's saying something along the lines of killing, I think it was Gideon or was it Rumple?
It was Gideon.
Okay, yeah. So they're talking about killing Gideon, and Snow is just like, and I'm happy to help. We've been looking for a little mother-daughter bonding. So I thought that was cute way to show that, you know, she's on her side, and she's a little riled up because, you know, she's dealing with a lot lately, and killing, you know, or hunting someone down is the type of adventure that Snow needs in her life when she's not sleeping. All right, so we kind of touched on a bunch of the topics we want to unpack a little bit more in our favorite quotes and our thumbs up, thumbs down discussion, and I want to kick it off with Karen, because I think Gideon played such a huge part in this episode, and his motivations and intentions were kind of all over the place, and the further we got into the story, the more we found out about how he's behaving in Storybrooke is not actually maybe how he would behave if he was there on his own accord. So Karen, why don't you kick off this conversation on Gideon this episode?
Yeah, so this was simultaneously, I think, in my opinion, the worst and best part of the episode, because we find out that, okay, Gideon's motivation, we know Gideon's motivation is to kill the Savior. Now, he wanted to kill the Savior in order to suck up her essence into the sword, because why the hell not, which will allow him to cut a slice in the fabric of the universe and kill his mother. Right? That basically sums it up.
Yep, that pretty much is it.
So Emma really wants to kill the guy, but she's convinced by Rumple and Belle not to, because it's their son. They don't think he's evil. He wasn't born evil. He was made this way. It's the Black Fairy's fault. And instead of working to kill him, they suggest she works with him in order to take down the Black Fairy. So I was like, okay, we kind of been dealing with this whole thing for a couple of episodes now with like Gideon really wants to go against the Black Fairy. He doesn't necessarily want to kill Emma just to kill Emma. It's the next step in his plan to get back at his quote unquote mother. And I was like, all right, I can kind of get behind the idea that he's not actually evil and maybe there's a way to bring him around. And then we get to that part in the episode when they're fighting the spider, and you kind of think at that point that Gideon doesn't know anything about the spider, that the Black Fairy is the one that brought the spider in, and he and Emma have to work together. Emma decides to be on his side, trust him for once. That all goes to hell, but that's in a minute. And it's when they're talking up on the balcony that he's saying, like, you know, I'm sorry, like, I never really wanted to kill you. I just really want to kill my mom. And I understand, like, you know, this situation is not great, but I'm going to do everything in my power to do the right thing and all of this. And I'm like, all right. On the one hand, kind of annoyed, because it felt very contrived. I don't know if you guys felt that way too, but it felt very convenient.
Yeah.
That he had like a change of heart.
Yeah, I would agree with that. And then you get to the part where you see that the Black Fairy has his heart. Mm-hmm. And I was like, but I still felt that he was saying some of that stuff. Like, you know, like I'm always so confused with the convenience of the ripping of the heart plot lines, because sometimes, like, when Regina does it in certain instances, she is in full control of, like, what's happening down to what they're saying, almost. Whereas other times it could be like, oh, I'm still acting, like, against, you know, this person holding my heart. So, like, it's hard to tell what's being said genuinely and what's, like, you know, if the character still has some semblance of, I can still say these things even though you have my heart type of thing.
I always thought of it as, you could either speak directly into the heart, as we've seen Regina do, and then that person says what you want them to say, versus, like, they have to act in a certain way because this other person has their heart, and so they're constantly working toward those ends. And it doesn't necessarily mean that that person's pulling the strings all the time. It's just, like the person with the heart, it's the person whose heart's been ripped out kind of knows, all right, I have no power in this situation. I need to do what I'm told to do or else I'm going to die. So, but I guess that, like, comes down to the point of why I both hated and loved this part, because as Kristen called it, it's like kind of a triple cross, because you imagine that they're working together for the first time and they're really trying to be on the same page and take down the Black Fairy. And then you realize, no, Gideon's actually the one that called forth the spider. He knew he couldn't kill the savior on his own, but with the spider could do it and he could use her essence for what he wanted to begin with. But then in reality, yes, the Black Fairy actually does have Gideon's heart. And so his intentions might be impure, but that's not necessarily his fault. And that if he had his heart, perhaps he would voluntarily and happily work with Emma to take down the Black Fairy. And I just, the back and forth kind of bothered me a little bit. And when he was appearing to work with her, I was like, I don't know. Like, I trust him in this moment, but, like, it felt like poor writing. But now looking back on it, I'm like, okay, that actually seems fair because he was trying to gain her trust in order to do all the rest of this. And the fact that the Black Fairy does have his heart makes me not hate Gideon as much, because he kind of can't help what's going on right now.
Yeah, I definitely agree with the not really being able to hate Gideon as much, which is great because I think that that adds a layer of complexity to the character that creates a really interesting conflict. But then again, it also allows Rumpel to be kind of half correct, which made me even angrier. Where I'm like, yeah, okay, I get it, Rumpel. Like, yeah, your son's actually not that bad, and I can totally see that, but I'm not going to agree with you. So it's a conflict of interest in many ways.
Can we just take a minute to reflect that Gideon basically summoned Shelob and he pulled a Frodo on Emma?
Like, yes. I said the same thing. I was like, Emma is definitely Frodo in this situation. And we had, like, Sting with the sword glowing. And I'm like, what is happening right now?
It was the most Lord of the Rings thing I've seen in a long time.
Yeah. I think Kristen was mad at me because I didn't get any of the Lord of the Rings references she was coming up with. And I was like, yeah, sure. Totally. 100% on board with this.
It's like, thanks, Karen. Thanks a lot.
I tried.
It was okay. I'm just glad you kind of had the same reaction, because as she's being wrapped in this, in the, like, webbing, I'm like, oh my god. Like, did somebody watch Lord of the Rings recently? Like, what's going on?
This is literally what happened.
Like, yeah, like, literally.
Also, what did you guys think of the spider? Because, like, overall, it actually wasn't too bad CGI-wise, and I think it was pretty scary, except, like, when she was getting wrapped up, I was like, all right, this is kind of looking ridiculous now.
Why couldn't it be follow the butterflies?
I immediately went to Aragog, not Lord of the Rings.
I tried not to look at it, because giant spiders are just on my no list, so I didn't really dissect the special effect. I was just like, oh great, a giant spider, fabulous. It couldn't be anything else. Like, yeah.
I looked over a couple of times and she was definitely hiding behind her hands.
Yeah. It's just gross.
I was just frustrated with the fact that you have these two people who have all of this magic and yes, they tried to use it in the beginning to fight the spider, but like the convenience of the magic in the world and what works and what doesn't just, it drives me insane. Like you couldn't like shoot the webbing and get out of the house and then put like a spell on the house and then trap the spider. I mean, obviously we had to get Gideon to double cross her somehow, but it was just, I'm like, what? Why aren't we using the sword to cut through the webbing? Why aren't we doing this? Why aren't we doing that? So I had a lot of questions that weren't making sense, but I did like the CGI of the spider. I thought that Emma, again, she can't make her hand tremble and she can't act like she's actually stuck to anything. It's just hard times being Emma Swan acting wise.
When she broke free, I was like, wow, that was way easier than it should have been.
I did think that the scene where Rumpel comes in and like, you know, because she is like passed out in that webbing, and when Rumpel comes in and cuts her open and, you know, he's like, Miss Swan, and then he's like, Emma, 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 and I'm like, oh my god, that's not the face you want to see when you're coming back from the brink of death.
Am I in hell? Did I die?
And then he's like standing there like using his like dagger as his magic. I'm like, this looks ridiculous. CGI budget, they saved some money somewhere else and they've been doing a really good job in the second half of this season. Let's move on to talk about Henry for a little bit, because I agree with Kristen. I think that Henry having a bit of a storyline is interesting, especially because like we've been alluding to, like when we get frustrated that he doesn't have a storyline, he is the author, and it was nice that they were able to bring back Isaac and then obviously set him free. But Kristen, what did you specifically want to talk about with Henry's sudden importance in this world?
Basically I'm just really glad that Henry is being brought back into the plot, because personally I find him one of the more interesting characters, and we don't get nearly enough of him. Like, he's the one character that they could really, him and Emma technically, that they could really do anything with. Like, there is no fairy tale attached to him. Like, he is kind of an anomaly amongst all of these people who we know as, you know, Snow White or Charming or the Evil Queen or Regina now. You know, so it seems silly that they wouldn't have him more integral to the plot more often, because I feel like he's one of the characters, especially now that he's older, that they could put into peril and we would actually believe it could be possible that he dies. When he was a kid, it would have been really weird for them to kill the child, so we all kind of thought he would survive all of those, you know, near scrapes. But now that he's a little older and has an active role and can, you know, has a little more agency and can make his own decisions and isn't just, you know, listening to his moms and doing everything they tell him to do, or, you know, not doing it. It just, there's something about why they don't give Henry more plot that really bugs me. But then we get this, you know, the start of what I'm hoping is something pretty significant for him with this random other language and the final story and, you know, all of that. It just seems like, finally, Henry is going to be integral to what is going on. You know, who knows where all of this Gideon nonsense is going to, you know, lead us to this final battle or whatever. But I'm just really happy to see Henry, the author, getting involved again.
Yeah, I liked that they still had Isaac locked up somewhere and they were able to go to him and get more information. I mean, they didn't get everything either. And the author is such an interesting concept that it's a place where there is no story. So like you were saying, it's so open and can go any which way. It almost doesn't make sense that they haven't been using it since they introduced the author, because you're not going to be like penalized for getting a character wrong that you've well established. Like, they have such a blank slate with this character that they can do whatever they want. And I think that is almost scaring them a bit, because they have to like make up a full, you know, character and fill it in and make sure that it fits into the world. But I think it could be a really interesting place for them to start now and then even pick up in season 7 should they continue on, just make push Henry into the forefront of the storytelling and give him some agency and see what all the complications that come with being the author are. Because like Isaac was saying, when they were at the town line, it's like, he's like, this is only the beginning. Like soon Henry could go completely mad. And like, you might want to put him where Isaac was, because he's not going to be able to control these powers. And it's sort of a similar story that we saw with Emma, like her learning what it means to be the savior. We're now having Henry learning what it means to be the author. And that could provide some really cool areas. Like, let's say he messes up someone's story or something happens with the book again. Like, there's so many unturned stones here for them to explore. Karen and Caitlin, what do you think about Henry's rise to fame here?
I'm intrigued for sure. I think that it's a really interesting jumping off point. Wasn't expecting a storyline like this to pop up. So it's kind of nice that he has a little bit more to work with, but also intriguing in terms of just giving us, you know, a B or C plot to work with on top of everything else. Because I think Once Upon a Time is one of those shows that's like, sometimes it's nice because of its complexity, because there's so much to work with in this world. There are so many characters. Other times it is a little bit better when everything's central, but because Henry hasn't gotten a lot of stuff, I'm kind of interested that they've added this other layer to it.
The one thing that I keep coming back to is because they're saying, you know, oh, it's the final chapter. What happens with the author powers once the book is done? Mm. Like, there's no reason for the author to exist at that point. So what happens to Henry once the book is complete? That seems like it could be, they could go one way where it's just like, oh, and then his purpose is fulfilled and everything is great, or, and then it destroys him or something. Like, there's polar opposite directions you could take with that, but it just sort of, that's what I keep going back to, like, what happens when it's done.
And I think that they could have maybe set up another, that, well, or maybe they already did with the Land of Untold Stories coming in, because all of these people don't have stories and they're not finished yet. So how do they play into this larger Once Upon a Time book? And does it have anything to do with all of the blank books that exist in that mansion? Like, I don't think I understand the rules of what it means to be the author. Like you were saying, Kate, like, what happens when this story ends? Like, or does it end? Does it ever end? Because there is a future, unless, like what Isaac was hinting at, where it is the final chapter and you don't want to be around when X, Y, and Z happens to the savior, then he must know something that we don't know already. And yet they're just sending him off to New York. They're like, oh, you know what happens, but okay, yeah, get in your van and go. I'm like, no, he seems important.
Yeah, that made me very confused.
I was like, he knows what's coming and you're just still going to let him go? It didn't seem right.
Yeah, like when you drop a bomb like that as you're like getting in the soccer mom van, like, hey, wait a minute. No, you can't go anywhere. Like, Regina's standing right there. Like, stop him. Yeah. Get some more info before he just rides off into the sunset. Like, yeah, I definitely agree there.
And I think this is something I noted while I was watching the episode. I think this is the last primetime show to mention Hamilton in the dialogue and make a reference to how hard it is to get tickets. So we can cross out our bingo cards. They're all full. Every single primetime show has talked about Hamilton now.
I literally do not care. I still think that this is the funniest thing in the entire world.
His final line where he's like, and the Hamilton tickets, I'm guessing that's a no. And he's like, well, there's some things even magic can't do.
That was so great.
Well, I'm starting to feel that way about Dear Evan Hansen. So I've moved on in my Broadway.
I will say that in my like previous thoughts about Henry, I've always kind of wondered if by the end of this series, we would discover that Henry actually is a fairy tale character. And that in addition to like Emma kind of being a fairy tale character, but just one that we don't really know. Like, she's the daughter of Snow and Charming. We know Snow and Charming. We've just never seen the chapter of their story that includes a daughter. So I always kind of wondered if somehow, some way down the line, we would find out that Henry is insert character here. And I'm wondering if maybe, like, once an author's book, like, if there's different authors for different books, or if, you know, it's all on him, like, once he finishes a story, like, he becomes a part of it or something like that. I kind of wondered if maybe that may have something to do with it. And the reason that the author was all freaked out, the former one, was all freaked out is because, like, Storybrooke would cease to exist or something like that, because they'd all end up back in the Enchanted Forest again, or I don't know. So part of me has always wondered if that may be where this, you know, one of the possible endings for Henry and that little bit of the story, but, you know, who knows?
Yeah, that could be interesting. What do you guys think of the show sort of resetting and maybe, like Kristen was kind of pitching, Storybrooke going away? Or, like, would you want them to reset in the Enchanted Forest, or would you kind of want to see Storybrooke continue on in some form?
The Enchanted Forest is so much richer to me. Like, there are so many more ways you can bring people in. Like, I get the show has always been about, like, here are the Enchanted Forest people, and here's, you know, what they're like in Storybrooke and how those different sides kind of come together and parallel each other. Which, yes, has always been the basis of the show, but once you're in the Enchanted Forest, I feel like on a show that's limitless to begin with, like, you get even more options, and it's cool to be able to bring in maybe, I guess not more magic, because you still have magic in Storybrooke, but it just feels more fantastical to me.
It's hard to imagine the show continuing without the Storybrooke setting, though, because mm-hmm. it's been so central for 6 years. I find it just, it wouldn't feel like the same show, but then again, you know, I guess that's kind of the point of the reset.
Yeah, I think I would miss the Storybrooke element. I think it adds something unique, whereas if we're in the Enchanted Forest, I would feel, it's still cool that all the characters are connected and these worlds with the different realms and stuff still are, like, linked together. Like, you know, you can walk, you know, 80 miles east and you're in the Brave Land. Like, you know, like, there's all sorts of weird lands that are connected there. But mm-hmm. I think that Storybrooke is such a, like, a, it's a cool place. Plus, I like seeing these characters in the real world. I think that they would have, unless something was completely erased, like, from them, like, a part of them was erased, I don't think that they would adapt well being back in the Enchanted Forest. I think we'd lose something of the characters that they spent 6 years building if they were all of a sudden back there with their full knowledge that they were back there.
Yeah, I feel like, just it occurred to me, you know, in the Enchanted Forest, they have to kind of fit into the mold of, like, the people they are in that world, whereas when they stay in Storybrooke, they get to be the people that they have chosen to be. Like, mm-hmm. they have the knowledge of both, like, Enchanted Forest life and their life in Storybrooke, and they've kind of melded the two. So to me, it feels like they're more them, their true selves if they get to stay in Storybrooke.
I agree. And we've seen them be displaced before back into the Enchanted Forest. Both remembering who they are from Storybrooke, not remembering who they are, being in an alternate timeline where some events didn't happen. So it's a weird, like, we've seen a lot of combinations, but I think that my favorite, like, story arc and timeline is them being in Storybrooke with the ability to get back and forth between the Enchanted Forest. So maybe the realms aren't as closed off anymore, but they can still remain in Storybrooke as much as possible. But I think it could be interesting either way to see how they would play it, whether they're aware of who they were in Storybrooke and resetting in the Enchanted Forest, or there's a, you know, there's a lot they can do, because the rules of this show are definitely not set in stone by any means.
For sure.
And that kind of brings me to the concept that I wanted to talk about, which is like the fact that these characters are still so concerned or like convinced that they can change someone's destiny. And while I think that that's true to some extent, I think things always still end up working out in the pattern that it's supposed to in some way, whereas like one minor detail is changed, but the end result is still the same. So I'm always just getting frustrated lately, at least, with people trying to either change their fate or like, because right now this whole season we've been going fighting the idea that Emma is going to be stabbed by a hooded figure on a showdown in the middle of Storybrooke. I still think that that's going to happen, yet they do not. So it's this idea of like, okay, well, if we do X, Y, and Z, that other thing won't happen. I still think we're always going to get to that point. And I feel like it's such a, I don't know, it's becoming more and more frustrating to constantly have this push and pull of, well, we're just going to eliminate that whole thing once and for all. But it's, I think there's always going to be this threat of, no, you're tied to some sort of fate and some sort of outcome that you cannot change. So Regina is wanted to vanquish the evil queen, and yet their fate is to always be intertwined and exist at the same time. So they both exist and they exist within one another. She came to the conclusion that, you know, she needed to put some of her goodness into the evil heart of the evil queen. And she in turn took some of the darkness back inside her. So now they both exist, but you know, they both have darkness and light within them. I don't know. I feel like it's such a first world once upon a time problem to be like, they just need to accept that things are going to happen and just get on with their lives. And it would take away a lot of the unnecessary repetitive conversations that I think that they have constantly. I don't know. I've just become so frustrated with hearing the same dialogue over and over again. So I think that's more frustrating to me than anything else.
Well, maybe if they focused on, rather than like trying to stop the thing that Emma saw happening from happening, if they like tried to focus on helping her survive it, like finding a certain kind of magic or a spell or something that could help her, you know, not die. Like, as far as she sees, she gets stabbed. She doesn't actually like see herself die. She just sees herself get stabbed with it and fall or whatever. So it's like, if they would just work on like interpreting it rather than we must stop this, or, you know, now they kind of feel like it's happened and that it's, you know, that the exact inner altercation that she saw is kind of done. I'm with you. I think we're eventually going to get back to it because it wasn't the same as what we saw in her vision. So, you know, it's still looming out there. I feel like there are better things they can focus on to help her survive that altercation than just like, we must stop it. We can do it by helping Gideon. We can do it by killing Gideon. We can do it by, you know, insert problem here.
Yeah. I think that's a great point. It's more them feeling so resigned to one thing that they lose focus on everything else. And there are so many different tactics they could take, like, okay, well, are we going to get rid of Gideon, or are we going to figure out some sort of, like, is Regina going to go off and try to figure out some sort of weird magic thing that she forgot existed until the most convenient moment ever? But I think there just needs to be a change that could come with a reset or this focus on the introduction of Henry's storyline, which could really change and shake things up in a good way. So I'm hoping that does it for me, that, you know, getting the author storyline involved, especially because, as Isaac pointed out too, we're coming to the final chapter, and what happens after that, we don't know. Like, how much can Henry really control the outcome of what's coming? So that'll be fun.
It's not just you, Brittany. Like, this is literally the same plot line that's happening this season on The Flash. And so I'm having, like, double issues where they're trying to stop some of death from occurring in the future. And the only thing I can keep thinking is, has no one considered that by attempting to stop the thing from happening, you are actually causing it to happen that way? That's how that works. Have none of you ever watched television before? Like, so it just seems like the efforts to change things is what brings the events to unfold the way they do. So like Kristen said, maybe they need to turn their focus in another way that's going to be far more productive. But I think the fatigue, at least for me, comes from this being the way this type of story is approached basically every time I've ever seen this story play out.
Yeah, it's definitely fatigue of storytelling is definitely in play here. And I think Once Upon a Time is a victim of repetitive storytelling as well. So we're not only getting it multiple times within the Once Upon a Time universe over seasons, but like you said, Caitlin, we're seeing it elsewhere too. And so it's like, okay, somebody's got to make a change. And let's hope that Once Upon a Time can shake things up a little bit more as the season carries on. And we know that there's going to be at least one major shakeup, which again, The Flash also just did, which is have a musical episode. So when in doubt, make them sing.
True story.
But speaking of a little bit of like levity to these episodes, Caitlin, let's close it off with what you want to talk about, which is Hook is now stuck in Neverland. And what does this mean?
Yeah. Based on the preview, I thought this was going to be a much bigger part of this episode, and it ended up being a fairly minor story in comparison. But basically, we have Hook track down Blackbeard with the knowledge that he probably has a magic bean on him that he can use to get back to Storybrooke. So he goes and tracks down Blackbeard, and I love the, like, are you trying to antagonize me? Yes, I am. So he convinces them to play a game of poker in exchange for if he wins, he gets the bean. If he loses, Blackbeard gets the Jolly Roger, which, look at that. Hook has been throwing around the Jolly Roger quite a bit these days. Because I guess he's found his real home. It's no longer the Jolly Roger, I guess. But he tricks Blackbeard because the Jolly Roger's in the other realm. So they use the bean, but we find out that Gideon has enchanted Hook, so he can't at this point return to Storybrooke. So when they go through the portal, they end up in probably the last place that Hook needs to be at this point, which is Neverland. And admittedly, I had to go read the Once Upon a Time wiki for a reminder on what actually happened in the Neverland storyline, because it was so long ago.
I know.
And like,
I thought about
80,000 things have happened since then. But there are still lost boys on the island. The very worst of the worst are there, and they, in a very Pirates of the Caribbean-esque sequence, start chasing Blackbeard and Hook. Like, I just think of, like, Jack Sparrow running down the beach in, I think, the second one, getting chased.
Mm-hmm. I thought they looked like the Night's Watch standing on the edge like that. I was like, oh my god.
Blackbeard somehow knocks Hook out by hitting him on the shoulder.
Yeah.
I was like, he hit him on the shoulder, come on. But he,
I wasn't the only one that noticed that.
It's a new pressure point. Just go. Yeah.
It's the Vulcan death hit, I guess. So he takes a rowboat and leaves, and then Hook is left running down the beach from lost boys who would very much like to kill him. He's basically in a very bad place and has no way to get home at this point.
I would love to see, like, yeah, Hook and Emma, they're great and everything, but I would love to see Hook just, like, own Neverland and just take over being in control of the Lost Boys and just running the shit out of that place. It would be so cool to see. I'd watch it. I'd watch that series.
There's a successful spinoff.
Yeah. There you go. And, like, somehow down the way, Emma stumbles across him and he's like, I'm good.
Yeah.
Like, I got this place. You want to stay? Like,
want to be the queen of Neverland?
Right, exactly.
Oh, I would love that so much. Speaking of ridiculousness, though, like, not only does he get knocked out by, you know, him hitting him on the shoulder, which also that camera work was so good when he was falling and trying to get up. I was like, either someone just like fell with him by accident and they were like, oh, this actually looks good. Or they like were like, you know what, let's try something cool 6 seasons in and give you a really cool camera take for one shot of Once Upon a Time.
I actually mentioned this to Kristen after we finished watching it, because I was like, I wonder who directed this, because you could tell that the camera work was different. Usually on television shows, if people aren't aware, a lot of the times, like, they switch out directors every week. It's always somebody new. Sometimes they have, like, one person who generally comes back for a majority of them, like their go-to person, but they tend to bring in a whole bunch of different people and they just float around to different TV shows directing like a single episode. And I really want to know who directed this one, because between that and they had like this push-up shot into Hook's face at some point when he had this like dramatic line to say, and it was just, it felt very different, and I thought it was a really cool choice.
Yeah, I really, really liked it. I was like, whoa, what are we doing here? All right. I was like, in it. It brought me back into the episode, which is awesome. And then the whole scene that followed where the most ridiculous thing ever, it was like they're both, Blackbeard and Hook are both talking at a normal level. They're not screaming by any means or straining their vocal cords, yet Blackbeard is shown as being shot so far out to sea and they're having a conversation. I'm like, you are literally going further and further away from Hook and yet you're still speaking at the same volume. And he's like, Hook's on the shore, like not even on the shoreline near the water, like he's pretty far back on the shore, and it's just like, yes, okay, pirates forever. Oh gosh,
logistics.
Yeah,
they're so inconvenient.
Apparently this episode was directed by Billy Gearhart, who has done director of Sons of Anarchy, Walking Dead, Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., Jessica Jones. He's been around.
Yeah, is this his first Once Upon a Time?
So he's actually done 6 episodes of Once Upon a Time.
Okay,
cool. I was going to say, like, Walking Dead does some weird things with cameras sometimes, so mm-hmm. that would totally fit in. Like, it makes sense that he would pull something like that. The one shot of Emma, like, that came up, like, from her crotch as she was getting attacked by the spider was kind of weird, but I was like, okay, I can go for it. Like, at least it was something different. Like, I was like, all right, let's go for it. Go with it. Whatever.
I was like, are we on the right channel?
Guys, yeah. He even did an episode of Once Upon a Time in Wonderland.
Oh, boy. I'm so sorry. That's on your resume forever.
Sorry, buddy.
All right. Well, that pretty much wraps up everything that happened in this week's episode. Next week's episode is titled Awake. From the preview, I don't even really remember what happened in the preview. Obviously, we're going to pick up with Hook still being stuck in Neverland. Oh, Snow and David seem really concerned about Emma in the promo. I felt really bad for them. Oh my gosh. We're getting a lot of trade-off with David and Snow in these episodes, which is interesting.
So is this the episode where they get the curse broken with Awake?
I hope so.
Yeah, that was what Karen said something and I went, that makes a lot of sense. It's called Awake. Like, okay.
Hopefully Regina finds a way to break that, or maybe they bargain with gold, or maybe the Black Fairy does it for like as a bargaining tool, being like, well, I can wake up your parents because I can break any magic because I'm awesome. Yeah, she's in town. So we have to deal with that now. Rumple and his dear old mother are going to be, oh yeah, there's like weird alternate timeline stuff happening because Rumple's hair is back.
Oh, great. Oh, yes. That's right. Yeah, they're going to go back into the timeline.
They're going to go back and... Yeah. Stop, because Snow and David are together. Yeah. Snow and David are together, and they said, like, if we walk through that door, then Emma never becomes a savior or something like that.
Yeah. I did also want to say, I love how they've, like, I've never paid much attention to the Black Fairy's costume, but when she arrived in Storybrooke, like, the lighting was better or something, and it looked like spider webs or, like, broken glass. Like, on her dress. It was really cool. Just another props to the costume department, who mm-hmm. has lost Regina as their, like, you know, showpiece, especially now that the Evil Queen's gone. So, like, it was just really cool, and I'm curious, like, you know, as it goes, if any of that comes into play, but just really neat.
Yeah, all of her headpieces are really awesome.
Yeah.
Like, I'm anything that's in her hair. Them.
They look so cool.
So, yeah, next week we have more Black Fairy, we have some more Snow and David being together, and Rumple's hair is back. So if you guys missed that, I hope you enjoy it being back. I know that so when they were going to film Trainspotting, told his like hairdresser that he was going to shave his head, and they made a wig before he left to go film it. So the wig is finally coming back for good use. Thank God. He's been creeping me out with the short hair here, because I really liked Begbie in Trainspotting, and then watching him here, I'm like,
But I hate you.
I have so many mixed feelings watching you on my screen. Yeah, so that'll be cool, and we will return with our discussion next week. So until then, I'm Brittany.
I'm Karen.
I'm Caitlin.
And I'm Kristen.
Bye, guys.
Bye.
Bye.